The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
By your command.
Felt a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
Who built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent Breed is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
Hear ye! Hear ye! I'm Dave Nelson, and on this 30th day of October 2014, I call to order this, the 28th meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, and another Galactic Netcast. Let's commence with the roll call. Mr. Matt Stein, are you here?
Yes, and given that introduction, I feel like we should have, like, kitschy 50s music, and like, and then when you're calling our name, everyone comes running in, and then there's applause, and we're like, yeah!
We can do that in post. We can do that in post, Matt. So
there you go. Make it happen, Dad.
All right, so your hypothetical question tonight is, if there was an asteroid heading towards the Earth, how would you personally save everyone from the global apocalypse?
I would send Arnold Schwarzenegger up in a spacecraft to slap it away from Earth.
I had a feeling that Schwarzenegger would be involved in somehow in your answer.
Pretty much just should assume that he's in every answer that I ever give, ever.
And one out of every three stories that you bring to the show as well.
You keep telling me when you're having these podcasts, so I assume it's not that bad. If it was bad, you would just stop telling me, and I'd just be like, hey, guys, when are we going to podcast? And then you treat me like that stinky kid in class, and everybody would just be like, well, yeah, soon.
No,
soon.
No.
No. We'll let you know.
No.
We're just on hiatus, and then you need to replace me.
All right. Brad Ludwig, are you here?
I am here.
Okay. Your question this week is, what's your favorite non-superhero powers-related gadget from any comic book character? Like Batman has a whatever.
Bat shark repellent. Sorry.
What did you say?
Bat shark repellent.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
The Batman movie.
Okay.
From the 60s.
Yes. Yeah. So what is it? What do you got?
Wow, is it something that the hero uses on a regular basis?
Could be. Could be anything. It's got to be non-powers related. Some kind of gadget.
Well, I would go with the original Peter Parker Spider-Man's web shooters.
Okay.
Wrist devices that he wore that shot out the spider web that he swings off of.
And okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but the original Spider-Man had web shooters, not biological, right? It's another.
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Biological ones weren't really introduced until, in the movie, more notably. In Ultimate Spider-Man, I believe that he had it was a biological thing.
Okay, all right. And finally, Anessa Moyens, are you here?
Yes.
This could be the wackiest question that I've ever asked you guys as far as the hypothetical questions go. If you could kill one person if they were turned into a zombie, who would it be and why?
I can't think of like any real life person that I would want to like actually have killed, but and Matt's probably gonna hate me, but I kind of want to kill off Clara Oswald already. I'm done with her. I'm ready for a new companion for the Doctor.
Really? Okay. All right. Yeah, she's very, people either love her or hate her.
You know, I liked her, and then she started doing the whole, I'm going to lie to my boyfriend, and I'm going to lie to the Doctor, and this is totally cool because I want to have adventures. And she just turned into like every other companion, and that and like the episodes are just really Clara heavy, and I'm over it.
Okay, all right. I'm glad that we know where you lie in this area in the Doctor Who arena tonight.
I want Capaldi to have more screen time, and I want Clara to just go away.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's without further ado, let's introduce our guest. He is the founder, editor, and chief of the website MajorSpoilers.com. He is the host of the Major Spoilers podcast, also Critical Hit and the Top 5 podcast. He's also co-host of the Comic Dorks podcast with former guest of the show, Scott Johnson. You can hear him every Monday morning on the Morning Stream podcast, hosted by the aforementioned Scott Johnson. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Mr. Steven Schleicher. Mr. Schleicher.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome to the show, and you get an introduction. Okay. Here you go. There you go. That's your fanfare, my friend.
Okay. Thank you. It's great to be here. Wonderful.
Thanks for coming on. And we picked a great week to have a person of your caliber on with us, because there was some major stuff that you specialize in. So tell us about majorspoilers.com. If you can describe it in a couple of sentences, what would you describe it as?
So Major Spoilers is a website that covers comic books and the pop culture industry. We have news, reviews, interviews, and a whole lot more. Of course, tons of podcasts for people to check out, majorspoilers.com.
And you guys covered the Marvel announcement this week, I'm guessing.
Yes, we did. A lot of stuff as it happened. A lot of big stuff that was announced this week. So.
And we're going to talk.
Want to go into that now, or if you want to talk about it later.
No. Let's save it for the end. Let's save it for your story. We're going to talk heavily into the Marvel announcements. But first, before we get into the new news, let's talk about what we talked about last week. And Brad, let's run down the minutes from the last meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
All right. If I can get my computer to cooperate here, and I can't. All right, that's awesome.
Do you want me to feed you the answers?
I'll have it here in a sec. My computer is just acting a little weird. Okay. Ah, there we go. So to start off, there we go. Our guest geek was Gary Yap. Gary Yap, Emmy-nominated artist for his work with King of the Hill, the Simpsons, and he's worked on storyboards for a number of different films. He was our guest geek. Matt brought to the table the story of robots possibly having rights in the future. If we were going to create artificial intelligence, and if intelligence and self-awareness defines life or being alive, then that would mean that robots would have to have some form of right. Maybe a right to vote, right to certain things.
Yeah, because we talked about how people might treat robots differently because they are robots, and that wouldn't be really fair, and it would be a bad example. My point was it'd be a bad example for the kids growing up treating robots differently. They see that, and they treat people differently. That was my view on it, at least.
Sure. The story I brought to the table was about the short film of machines keeping a war alive even after all the humans that started the war died. It was very short, you know, it was 2 minutes and 45 seconds, but it was very well animated, and it was a 3D animated short film from a gentleman in Russia, and well worth watching.
And I got around to watching it finally, and I was really impressed. Looks like it's got a steampunk feel to it, sort of.
Sort of, almost, you know, I'd almost say diesel punk.
Yeah.
And diesel punk being more, you know, obviously gas powered or of some sort. Let's see. Dave's story that he brought was how to turn Star Trek into the next Marvel universe. And it was a very interesting discussion. And we're seeing a lot of companies trying to manufacture universes out of their films. So it's not just the sequel, but actually creating a whole universe of stories that can be interconnected and going that route. And I don't want this to become a fad that people get sick of, because I think Marvel's doing a great job, and I hope people don't get burned out by people doing it poorly.
The thing is, though, these companies are creating universes where there aren't any, and Star Trek is already a universe, so why not take advantage of that?
That's true, and that is they've already set the precedent, you know, with there being, you know, Next Gen, and during that same time period, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and all that. You could definitely do something like that. And last but not least was Gary's story that NASA and the Indian government have signed up to team up and put together a space program on a global scale.
All right, so that's the minutes from last week. Thank you very much, Brad. Let's move on to new news. And Matt, as always, you're up first, and what a shock. It's an Arnold Schwarzenegger story.
Terminator Genesis. My first problem with this is the way they spell Genesis. I'm sure there's some reading or some reasoning, but it's dumb.
The S-Y-S is probably system.
That was my guess, but it's dumb.
It is dumb.
Anessa, you are... Anessa, you're smart. I didn't think of that.
Neither did I, but I acted like I did. I played it off real cool-like.
Well, that was the first thing I thought to thought of.
No, S-Y-S, I saw it, and I was like, come on, you guys are dumb. Open a dictionary. Anyways, there is a spoiler alert at the end, so I'm going to say that now, and then I'll say it again later, so if anyone doesn't want to know about it, you can mute me or whatever you want to do. But so far they have Sarah Connor being played by Emilia Clarke, who's in Game of Thrones, as the internet tells me. The man, the myth, the legend, Arnold Schwarzenegger himself will be returning as a quote-unquote good Terminator.
Yeah, again.
They say that he's playing a grandpa Terminator, whatever that means. I'm sure they're just working it into it because he's ancient.
Yeah,
although I believe... Oh, the title's absolutely dumb.
Yeah, but, throw grandpa Terminator in there. And
Yeah. But the guy, he will live forever. I love you, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Let's get an apartment. John Connor is played by Jason Clarke, who I will admit that I Googled to find out if Emilia Clarke and Jason Clarke were related, and Google autofilled it for me, so I was happy to know I'm not the only one. They're not related at all. Jai Courtney will be playing Kyle Reese, and I'm sure you guys will love this. Matt Smith of Doctor Who or whatever is currently an unknown character.
Well, I saw the cover of, was it Entertainment Weekly?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Matt Smith looks like a badass. He looks pretty cool.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they'll actually make a different character outside of the... we'll find out, though. But
is there time traveling involved?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Is there time traveling involved?
It seems that way. I mean,
I would assume so.
Yeah,
I mean, it kind of plays a loose part in all Terminator films.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's some time travel that changed something because they're changing the mythos. They're changing the story.
Yeah. Somebody stepped on a butterfly. That's why they have to spell Genesis wrong.
See? Yes.
So it's actually it's
alternate spell.
What, Matt?
You were going to say, I said in this alternate universe, people don't know how to spell.
Yes, apparently.
Yeah.
So was that the spoiler? Did I just spoil it?
Probably.
No. No, not at all. She said it's possible. The internet is bad over here. There's a chunk of spoiler, which I'm going to read right now.
Okay.
So this is a spoiler. If you don't want to hear it, turn it off. They're starting out, the guy who wrote this article says that it sounds as though Sarah Connor kind of plays the John Connor role from Terminator 2. Whatever that means, we'll find out. But the big, you know, huge news dropper of what the movie will be is this. Sarah Connor is not innocent. She was portrayed by Linda Hamilton in the original Terminator movies. She is not Hamilton's steely zero-body fat warrior in 1991's T2. As a gold sentence. Rather, she's the mother of humanity's messiah, was orphaned by a Terminator at age 9. Since then, she's been raised by, parentheses, brace yourself, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator, who is an older T-800 she calls Pops, which goes back to what was said earlier about the stupid name that they gave him. Hopefully they say his real name, and it's not just Pops all the time. But he is programmed to guard rather than kill, which is way different than the original. And as a result, Sarah is a highly trained antisocial recluse who's great with a sniper rifle but not so skilled at the nuances of human emotion. Which, anyone who's seen the second one, that's she kills all those guards like with her hands to get out of that insane asylum. So this is a complete like removal of her original character of being like a silent killer, and now she's just like a long-range killer.
Well,
which...
Okay, there's so many issues going on here. I mean,
but here's what you got to do. And now we can talk again when this movie comes out. But you have to like remove yourself from ever having seen the original Terminators, which I think that they're doing is they're aiming it towards an audience that knows of Terminators but never really gave a crap to see it, because that's what they're doing with a lot of movies now. And
yeah, that is not uncommon. That's not uncommon with movies when you're doing a reboot or whatever. And this is why they happen about every 10 years, because the kids, when you guys were kids 10 years ago, I don't know how old you were, 19, 12, something like that.
I was 19. Let's talk about how young I am, Dave.
So, yeah, 10 years ago, you may not have even seen the movie. So for a large number of people, this is going to be their first experience to Terminator. And in 10, 15 years, we will have another Terminator reboot.
It's an unfortunate situation for those of us that care about the classics, I guess you could say, because in 20 years, we'll have to deal with the same crap again. And as much as I want this Terminator to be really good, my hopes are pretty low given the steaming piles of crap that have been coming out for what are supposed to be amazing movies recently.
Now, I have a question for you guys, and Steven in particular. Do you think they changed the story to work around Arnold Schwarzenegger because he's old? Do you think they changed the story to make him fit in better?
That was actually one of the things that I thought that they were trying to do in the last movie. Basically what happens, and I think Arnold Schwarzenegger even said this in an interview, that skin is skin. Skin is going to age.
Yep.
The exoskeleton underneath doesn't age. So that's their out for explaining why Arnold gets older, yet he's supposed to be a robot, because he's got real skin. Real skin ages. It's going to get old.
Okay. So why do you think the story changed? I mean, why do all this stuff? Why change it so much?
Same reason why storylines change and comic book stories get retconned when a new writer comes in, because a new writer is trying to put his stamp on the property, and in the process is trying to obliterate what came before, so that everyone knows that he is the top dog and has marked his territory. So that's probably one of the main reasons why they're renaming it. Plus, you know, you can't go back to 1980 whenever and have everybody running around in feathered haircuts. So.
Well, from what I've heard, too, is they're going to be, part of the story is they're going to be looking in on that other timeline, like as like a third person, sort of. That's what I heard earlier on, so maybe that's changed. Who knows?
Well, you've got the doctor there, so anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
Well, if he plays a time traveler that's jumping between these realities, that is going to be so sad.
Yeah. I know. He can't catch a break. He can't get away from the time travel thing.
He's kind of being typecast as a time traveler. Actually, I think he can get away with it. Just previous roles that he's played in TV shows and whatnot. I mean, he was in, I can't think of it, Diary of a Call Girl for a little bit with Billy Piper.
Billy Piper, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he was in another TV show. I can't think of the name of it, but it's very politically oriented. And he was one of the people that worked in the office running campaigns and whatnot before he was the doctor. And so I think if he can do some more work that breaks away from sci-fi, then I think he'd be fine, like not being typecast as like a science fiction time traveler.
Yeah.
I just want to hear Matt Smith with an American accent, because we've seen Tenet, we've heard Tenet's American accent, we've heard.
Doesn't he like do an imitation of an American accent in one of the episodes?
Oh yeah,
he was wearing a Stetson. Dogs
wearing a Stetson, yeah. He was hamming that up though.
Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily want to hear him do an American accent. Just it's weird when you hear someone with their native accent do a completely different accent.
The thing is, though, sometimes you get used to it, like on this show, Chicago Fire, that guy that was on House, and I think he's either British or Australian. I don't remember what he sounds like in that original accent. I've been watching him on Chicago Fire for so long that I forgot what he sounds like in his original accent, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with Hugh Laurie. Like, I totally forgot that he was British until I went back and rewatched some old episodes of A Bit of Fry and Laurie, and I'm like, why does he sound so funny?
And somebody like who plays Rick Grimes?
I can't think of the actor's name, but yeah, he's another person, the person who plays Meg? Yeah, and Maggie. There we go, Maggie in The Walking Dead. She's from New Zealand?
Yeah, somewhere down there. Yeah.
Somewhere in the Southern Hemisphere. And yeah, it just seems like every other actor on TV is not American, but they have an American accent.
I think Matt's having some issues right now. He keeps...
Yeah, he blue screened.
Yeah.
He's
coming in and out of the...
Working on it.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to the next story, since Matt is no longer with us. Brad, you're up next. What do you got for us?
Well, so I'm going to throw Nostradamus into this.
And
I'm doing this for a reason. Now, Nostradamus is he was an astrologer from France over 400 years ago. And he was a person who was renowned for his prognostication abilities. He could see the future, and he wrote down his prophecies. And he was credited for prophesying the French Revolution, World War II. He actually kind of named Hitler. It's one of his biggest, you know, whenever everybody talks about how cool Nostradamus is, they're like, he almost got Hitler in there. So he's got to be the real deal. So, but the interesting thing about prophecies and the way, okay, that notification thing's really kind of upsetting. The interesting thing about prophecy is that in the way he wrote it, it was very generalized. You could apply it to just about anything. And on IO9, the article that caught my attention, and here's the title, Definitive Proof That Nostradamus Predicted Star Wars. Okay. And we're not talking just like episodes 1, 2, 3, or the original 4, 5, and 6. We're talking all of them. A lot of the things that could be applied that he had written could be applied to plot points in Star Wars. And we're going to go over some of these prophecies, and I'm going to give you what they're written and what they could actually mean in terms of Star Wars. And I'm not going to go through the entire list because the list is kind of lengthy, and you can go in our show notes to the IO9 page that has the full article with the prophecies. So the first prophecy I grabbed, the wretched, unfortunate Republic will again be ruined by a new authority. So in the terms of Star Wars, that could mean that it's undermined by corruption and bureaucracy. The Supreme Chancellor of the Galactic Republic is removed from office through a vote of no confidence and replaced by Senator Palpatine, who secretly is Darth Sidious.
You know, you are totally right, Brad, when it comes to these prophecies. They're so generalized that anybody could do that. Anybody at any time in human history could have said, a man will wash with a dirty cloth, you know, and...
Oh, man, he saw me in my bathroom this morning. That guy's a genius.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the same thing with horoscopes as well.
Yes.
Damn it, I was just going to say that.
No, sorry, Matt.
And Nostradamus was an astrologer as well. So, you know how you keep your bread and butter is by making generalized announcements of what's going to happen in the future and then go, see, I told you. I wrote it. It's right here.
You're going to have some kind of day-to-day.
See? So the next prophecy from Nostradamus is written as the nautical frog in its bosom be arrangement, which... You know, whatever that's supposed to mean. What in the terms of Star Wars, they're saying Jar Jar Binks takes it upon himself to propose that the Senate grant immediate emergency powers to the Supreme Chancellor Palpatine in response to the threat of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Jar Jar Binks, of course, being from a planet that a water planet.
Yep.
And he would be considered a nautical frog. So, yeah, of course.
Brad, I almost forgot about Jar Jar Binks until you brought him up again. Damn you.
Yeah, send me the therapy bill. The next prophecy, those most lettered in the celestial facts, punished by edict, hunted like criminals, and put to death wherever they will be found. What it really means in the Star Wars universe is the Great Jedi Purge begins with Order 66, in which Palpatine tells the clone commanders to execute the Jedi Knights.
See, I think they're reading too much into that. Okay, sorry.
I'm going to do just two more here. The next prophecy, the leader flees, hidden in the swampy marshes.
Oh, that's a no-brainer right there.
Yep, that means defeated by Emperor Palpatine, Jedi Master Yoda flees to the swamp world of Dagobah. And the last one, and like I said, there's a huge listing of these things on IO9. Last prophecy, before the Empire changes, a very wonderful event will take place. And what that means is Emperor Palpatine tortures and prepares to kill Luke Skywalker, who pleads for his father to help. And Darth Vader chooses to intercede and reverses the whole situation by pitching Palpatine's body down the reactor shaft of the Death Star.
And what was the noise he made?
Ah! Or something like that.
Okay, I have a crazy theory. Maybe Lucas was a big follower of Nostradamus before he wrote the original Star Wars and thought, hey, let's take all the predictions of Nostradamus and make a story out of it. That's my theory. That's my conspiracy theory.
And maybe you have something there. That's okay. He's swimming in his Scrooge McDuck pond full of cash, thanks to Disney still.
Yeah. All right. You know, this IO9, I love IO9. They do these kind of things once in a while, and they're awesome. I think I visit IO9.com more than any other website, besides maybe MajorSpoilers.com.
There you go.
Yeah, I go there on a daily basis because it's always enjoyable, always.
All right. Can't wait to read the rest of that list. Okay. So, this is my favorite story of the week, and we've been kind of covering this for a while now, following sci-fi's recovery, watching them slowly build up their arsenal of actual science fiction shows once again, and it came out this week that sci-fi basically admits they screwed up.
Thank God. Our national nightmare is over.
In an article with Entertainment Weekly, Sci-Fi proclaims the channel's new commitment to science fiction and the genre that originally made it great, but also there's a quiet admission that when they dropped their core programming and turned from sci-fi to sci-fi, they messed up. Now, Entertainment Weekly makes the point that given so many other channels, what they've recently done, like HBO's Game of Thrones, that's fantasy, AMC's zombie drama, The Walking Dead, that this is pretty much could have been their domain. So they kind of say that they could see why they're getting frustrated and thought, you know, it makes sense that they go back to this type of programming. And this is a really interesting article. They talked to a couple of different people. They talked to Sci-Fi president Dave Howe, and he says, we saw an explosion of sci-fi fantasy content across every cable and broadcast network out there. Perceptions of the genre have shifted dramatically. What that speaks to is an opportunity to re-own the genre and be at the forefront of high-end, buzzy, provocative storytelling and the epiphany of that was Battlestar Galactica. Because a lot of people think that, you know, the last great show on sci-fi was Battlestar Galactica. You may forget that there was a couple of other shows after that. There was Stargate Universe, which I liked. Nobody else seemed to like it. And Caprica, the one season of Caprica. Was that a full season? Did they even actually get through a full season of Caprica?
That I don't remember, because I never actually got around to watching Caprica.
I don't think they did.
No. I don't think they did either. Sci-Fi's new programming chief, Bill McGoldrick, tells Entertainment Weekly that the new shows, 12 Monkeys, they're doing a TV show version of the movie 12 Monkeys, and Ascension are just the beginning of the network's new direction. He said, we have in development now is more of a serious tone, more back to our roots. You've seen and probably heard about our desire to get back up to space. We have a couple of really big shows that are trying to accomplish that. Ascension, which they released the trailer for this week, and it looks awesome. And The Expanse, in particular, which play more toward, I think, the hardcore sci-fi fan who used to be perceived as niche but is now mainstream and commercial in a way that they've never seen before. So basically, they're realizing that the bread and butter now is sci-fi, which, thank God, it's finally come around to sci-fi again, because I don't know if about you guys, but I was really sick of seeing wrestling on sci-fi.
I can understand from a certain aspect wanting to be everything to everyone, but when you do that, you please nobody. So it's about damn time. Mm-hmm. They actually nutted up and committed themselves to doing sci-fi.
And this McGoldrick guy sounds like he's saying that I think is it Comcast or who owns sci-fi? It's
NBC Universal.
Yeah.
NBC.
It sounds like they're actually giving them a huge budget to work with. So they've got the backing of their bosses to do all this original science fiction programming.
Yeah, I think just get it in their minds that they have to change and adapt and do something every couple of years that's major. I was actually working for a website. It was Sci-Fi Tech back in 2005, 6, somewhere around there, which was owned by Sci-Fi Channel. It was the Sci-Fi Channel's technology blog. And so I was working for NBC Universal, and when our site changed its name to Device, happened right around the same time that the Sci-Fi Channel changed over to SIFI. And it was fine. I mean, we kind of rolled with it, even though they spelled Device DVICE with an upside down I. and then just, that went for, 7 years now. And that site shut down over the summer, and they're pointing everyone over to blaster.com, which is, again, not spelled with an ER, it's just spelled with an R at the end. So
that was my next question, Stephen. Is Blaster still owned by Sci-Fi?
Yeah, if you go up to their website, they've got the Sci-Fi stuff right there on the side. Sci-Fi Network, Sci-Fi Games, or Sci-Fi Games.
Okay, because I get a ton of contact from Blaster.com.
They're a fine site. I mean, but what they realized, kind of the opposite of what you're talking about in this article. They had a tech blog site, they had a comic book blog site, they had all these other sites that were specializing in different things, and they've closed a lot of those down, and they've wrapped them all into Blaster, which is a little bit more all-inclusive for a variety of different things. And that makes sense in the web world when, you may not, if you started a zombie website, you may not have enough zombie content to fill up a day's worth of stuff that you're paying people a full-time salary for. Mm-hmm. So you fold it all back into Blaster, for example, and you've got 100 articles that can go up instead of maybe one or two articles going up a day.
Yep.
And I think
Sci-Fi, realizing that they're, like you said earlier, their bread and butter is sci-fi, science fiction, is them just saying, hey, we should have diversified so much.
Mm-hmm. And I think they also have the advantage of other genres that were sort of sci-fi have become popular as well, like the whole comic book thing is could also be considered sci-fi, and fantasy is big now. So I think they have the advantage of having all of those different facets of sci-fi that are also popular.
They were also at the time up against G4. Of course, G4 has been screwed over left and right. And when it shut down, again, it's forcing more people to go and find out shows like AMC's Walking Dead and that kind of stuff, which shows that there's an audience for that kind of content.
Mm-hmm. Here's the slate of shows coming up. We talked about 12 Monkeys and Ascension. There's also The Expanse, which we mentioned. Childhood's End, 6-hour miniseries based on Arthur C. Clarke's sci-fi classic about the overlords, the aliens called the overlords. They now rule the Earth, and they make it into kind of a pseudo-utopia, but then there's like a catch. That premieres sometime next year. There's also Hunters, 13-episode series based on Whitley Strieber's novel Alien Hunter, and that premieres sometime in 2016. And there's a couple other shows that they didn't have on this list that I know that they have in development as well. And this is good stuff. Ascension, if you guys haven't seen the Ascension trailer, I highly recommend it. It's funny because Trisha Helfer is in it, and you could swear she's 6 in the way she talks. Her character seems like it's exactly the same as her character from Battlestar Galactica. But it's sci-fi is calling it an event, but I'm pretty sure it's a full series. It may be premiering the same way they did with Battlestar Galactica, with the miniseries and seeing where the interest lies in it, and then they'll launch into a full series. They may be doing that. I'm not really sure. We'll see, I guess.
I don't know. Didn't they do that Steven Spielberg Alien Abduction series? And that started out as like a 6-part miniseries, and then they tried to spin that into a regular ongoing show.
Brad, do you know?
I don't have any more information on that.
Okay.
I do not know.
What was...
it wouldn't surprise me, and that's really kind of the thing that we've seen sci-fi do in the past, where they will do a limited run on a show, and if it's popular, then let's go ahead and pick it up for something that's a lot longer. And they kind of follow that BBC modality of short season run, see what the reaction is, and then kick it into high gear.
Yeah, which is smart. You got to see, you know, where the interest lies. If people are interested, then go put more effort into it and more money into it.
And oftentimes with the BBC and ITV and whatnot, they'll maybe just only plan on doing one season period. They're like, right, we have this idea that we want to do. We're just going to put it out there and then we're done. And then it ends up getting like a huge, you know, response, like positive response. And they're like, well, and then they kind of take off. Because I think that's what happened with Broadchurch, is they had initially only planned on doing the one. So they're going to do a season two, from what I hear.
All right.
Seeing how that happens.
Yeah. All right. And Anasa, do you want to continue talking? Because you've got the next story.
I do, and it's totally not really related to movies or anything.
That's okay. I mean, okay, what we do here on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is we talk about sci-fi stories and things related to sci-fi. So this is related to sci-fi, right?
It is related to sci-fi.
And I drink beer.
you got to do what you do best there, Matt.
Story.
Matt.
Yeah, so I came across this article a while ago, and I thought it was really interesting and kind of cool. And I didn't realize that MIT has this large collection of science fiction stuff. It initially started about, I forget, in the 1940s with a wooden crate dragged between dorm rooms. And now they have a complete run of almost every science fiction magazine dating back to the 1920s. And their library just keeps growing. The titles include everything you'd expect, but also some obscure stuff, including fanzines and some 1950s sci-fi erotica that's kept out of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's MIT After Dark, baby.
Yep. The president of the society is called the Skinner, after former President L. Court Skinner. The treasurer is called the Lady High Embezzler, and the honorable secretary is the OnSec. And according to their paper, the MIT News, the current day MITSF, also pronounced as Misfits, is open about 40 hours per week and holds weekly meetings, usually on a Friday evening, and members admit it usually features very little business. Each meeting begins with the clanking of a 2-foot steel wrench onto a massive slab of titanium, and each member of the society, collectively known as Star Chamber, can vote up to 4 times, once per limb, on any issues brought to poll. In addition to a near overflow of books, the library's shelves are strewn with bizarre trinkets, including a collection of randomly placed toy bananas that no current member can explain. Misfits has a lot of inside jokes that predate current students, and it seems most alumni, Rowland says. We definitely have an obsession with bananas, but nobody seems to know why. So I just thought that was really cool that they have like a huge collection. And I'm kind of curious if they would ever actually take the time to start digitizing some of the more obscure.
Yeah, I was gonna suggest that. I wonder if they've thought about doing that. That would be a big job.
It'd be a huge job. But it would be really cool, especially the stuff that, you know, most people don't have access to now. So more of the obscure stuff, I think.
That's what interns are for, right? That's where get some freshmen in there and start scanning stuff.
You know, I'm sure they've got some library sciences people looking for an internship. So, yeah, I just thought that was really cool. And I'm kind of curious if they would ever open it up to, you know, visitors or something once in a while, have like a little tour group come in and look.
They totally should. I think that would be awesome. And, you know, there are some in my area, comic books, up at Bowling Green. They have a special collections of just comic books that have been around for forever. Some of them, I think they actually have not a really great copy of Action Comics #1. I know they for sure have a Detective Comics. But you can go in into the special collections and actually look at those original pieces of literature. It'd be cool if they did the same thing with this.
Oh, yeah. It'd be awesome.
And, Stephen, you're a you work at a college, right? You teach.
No, not anymore, actually.
Oh, you don't.
I quit my job this past summer.
Oh, okay.
Spoilers full time now.
I missed that. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You're living my dream life right there. Damn you.
8 years and finally getting fed up with bureaucracy that I finally jumped.
Yeah, there's a lot of it in universities.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so cool. There's some really cool old classic sci-fi that I'd love to see. In fact, there was a story that I almost talked about tonight. There was a Ovaltine knockoff back in the 50s that actually produced a comic book. It was like a character, like a space ranger. Like he went out in space and did adventures. And that's the kind of thing that I would love to see in an old sci-fi collection like that. It's just these... I'd love retro-looking... And actual retro science fiction, because I just love the what they thought our future would be like, the shiny chrome, you know, ray guns with the big, you know, the big ray guns kind of thing. That's some cool stuff.
Yeah, you're thinking of Captain Midnight, right?
No, in fact, I don't remember the name, but I could tell you for sure that's not the name.
Okay, because I was just reading that Ovaltine. Took over sponsorship of Captain Midnight in the 1940s. I thought maybe that's what you were talking about.
Okay. Well, maybe they were inspired by Captain Midnight and with their... Yeah. All right, Anessa, thank you very much. Anything else on that story? Is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it.
All right. Hopefully they'll open that up to the public someday. That'd be cool to see.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. I'll have to look and see if it's open to the public at all.
Yeah, do some investigating reporting on that. We'll do an eye report next time.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least,
travel.
Last but not least, Stephen, we brought you here for a specific reason. No, I had no idea that Marvel would be making this big announcement this week, but it was good timing for us. They had a press conference on, was it Tuesday or Wednesday?
It was on Tuesday afternoon at 11 o'clock Eastern time, or sorry, Pacific time.
So let's run it down. Let's get the highlights out of the way here. What did they announce?
So what the thing was, nobody kind of knew what was going on. Everybody thought they were just going to show off maybe the first official trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron. They only had 30 minutes scheduled, so they didn't think it was going to be a big deal. But then suddenly Kevin Feige got up on the stage and just said, okay, we're going to tell you the next dozen or so movies that we're going to have coming out over the next 5 years, and here they are. And he just started rattling off. Movies, of course, we know Big Hero 6 is not really a Marvel movie, although it's coming out this year. Next year, we have Avengers Age of Ultron, of course, and then in 2016, Captain America, which is going to be the Civil War storyline that people know from comic books, pitting the Registration Act, those who are in favor of superheroes unmasking and revealing themselves, and those who are opposed to that kind of stuff. So it pits Captain America against Iron Man. A little bit of spoiler, if anyone hasn't read the Civil War storyline, Captain America dies at some point.
Oh, my God.
Then he also announced that Doctor Strange was coming out in November of 2016. In 2017, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which had a date change from July to May of that year. Thor Ragnarok takes that Guardians of the Galaxy's place. Ragnarok meaning the end of all things, you know, apocalypse or whatever that you want to put into that. And then they also announced a brand new character coming to the Marvel Universe that we haven't seen in the cinematic universe in the form of Black Panther being played by Chadwick Boseman that you know as Little Richard from, or not Little, yeah, Little Richard? Or no, James Brown, sorry.
Yeah, James Brown.
And then he also played Jackie Robinson in 42, that movie. So he will be playing the Black Panther in 2017,
and he just signed a five picture deal with Marvel, right?
Five picture deal, and here's why he may have signed this five picture deal. While there may be a Black Panther standalone movie in 2017, Marvel Studios does not currently own the rights to have Spider-Man in their films. That's owned by Sony, All Out, and they have to do some serious negotiation if they ever wanted to use Spider-Man in one of their Marvel movies. A little bit different than the Scarlet Witch Quicksilver thing that we see in X-Men Days of Future Past and the upcoming Age of Ultron movie. The reason why this is important is that Black Panther may be serving the Spider-Man role in Civil War.
Interesting.
And for those of you that know that, Peter Parker was full on the side of Tony Stark. He unmasks in front of everyone, reveals himself to be Spider-Man. He gets a whole new suit of spider armor, and then towards the end of that event, changes his mind, thinks that it was a bad idea, sides with Captain America, and craziness ensues, including wiping everyone's memory of who Spider-Man was and the fact that he was married. So there you go. Black Panther, though, standalone movie, November 3rd, 2017. Then we have, in 2018, Avengers Infinity War Part 1. They're taking the Infinity Gauntlet story and breaking it into two parts. Part 1 comes out in May of 2018. Also in May of 2018, we get to see the Inhumans. That will be pretty cool. That also seems to be in line with rumors that we've heard that the Inhumans are taking the X-Men place in the Marvel Universe. And then I'm missing Captain Marvel also comes out in 2018. This will be Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel. And so we're getting another standalone female character in that as well. And then in 2019, it all wraps up with Infinity War Part 2.
And I saw the leaked footage from the teaser trailer for the Infinity War series.
Yeah, where it's got Galactus, Thanos,
yeah,
clutching his fist with the all the Infinity Gems in place.
Now, is that going to be like every single character from the Marvel Cinematic Universe in those films? Pretty much.
I'm going to guess so. I mean, if you're really building up to a cosmic level event, and if you've read the Infinity Gauntlet, which you really should, if you haven't, it may be a little weird for those of you who jump into it without knowing some of the other characters. It is a pretty big event, and so to take the characters off of Earth, send them hurtling out in space, which is where you can get some Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and some Captain Marvel crossover stuff going on with that. It's a pretty big and we don't know what's announced after Infinity War Part 2, but fairly finite for the current Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
I mean, this is all speculation, but I mean, you can kind of connect some dots and see what's going on.
So, Brad, our resident comic book person, what's your opinion? What's your thoughts on this announcement, these announcements this week, Brad?
No, I think they have to keep moving things forward. They have to, you know, and we've talked about this before, they have to move to a more cosmic scale, especially if they want to have, you know, they introduce Thanos. That's your only way to play that. There are logistical differences with not owning all of the characters of the Marvel Universe, so you do have to make some changes here and there. Because Spider-Man's the linchpin of the Civil War story.
And who knows? Kevin said after the press conference when people were asking him about, oh, what about this Doctor Strange casting rumor that we heard? What's going on with Spider-Man? And he basically said, if we didn't announce it today, it's either not happening or we're still in intense negotiations over it.
So it could be, it could happen yet. Spider-Man still may be able to be part of it.
I don't think it's in Sony's best interest. I mean, if you think about it this way, let's say the MCU movies, they bring in Spider-Man and it's a huge hit, then Sony can always come back and, you know, make another Spider-Man movie right after that and try to ride on the coattails. Right now we're seeing the Fantastic Four comic book fold up.
Right.
And part of it is nobody can write a sustained Fantastic Four comic book to save their lives.
Well,
first off,
yes, you're right. But there's also this question/rumor of Marvel is so upset that they don't have those characters in the comics that they are spiting their comic book property for the movies. This is the same reason why we've got the death of Wolverine going on, with Wolverine still being as popular as it is.
That's crazy.
Is why we're seeing the Inhumans taking a more being more in front of the camera than the X-Men are over in the Marvel Universe right now. It's all very petty.
It's a business decision. If the rights to the characters being owned by Sony are contingent on them still being active in the Marvel Universe, if you pull the plug on them, you know, you can then leverage to get them all back.
For the movies, it's a little bit different because they have to actively be pursuing a movie in order to retain those rights. And if they don't hit them by certain deadlines, then the rights revert back to the to the holders. That's what happened with the Daredevil movie.
Yep.
They got down to the wire and were not able to get a movie in production, and so the Daredevil rights reverted back to Marvel, and that's when they instantly started up work on the Netflix series.
And that's why, sorry, Brad, I wanted to say one thing real quick, and that's why Sony seems like they're doubling down in the Spider-Man world. They've got the Sinister Six movies right. in development, and then I saw a story today that they may be working like on a, and this is totally rumor, a team of spider heroes from the Spider-Man universe as well.
Interesting. They did. I hadn't heard about that. I do know that they need to, that the Amazing Spider-Man 3 got pushed back a year at least to 2018.
Well, to set them back.
2017. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing. If they, you know, Sony financially is not in the best condition right now, especially on their electronics front. So if a movie tanks, they don't have anything to balance out the entire corporation. Yep. It would not surprise me if we don't see the Sinister Six movie get made. It will be a huge shock if they don't get an Amazing Spider-Man 3 out by 2018, because after that, I think the rights would revert back to Marvel.
I can't remember the other point I was going to make now.
Sorry.
No, that's my fault. I have a... you think about it, Brad, for a second.
The other thing, too, is, you know, the comic book is an advertisement for the characters. So,
right.
You know, if you pull that rug out from Sony, you're not helping them necessarily by having those characters in a running comic book.
Yeah, the only problem with that is that there are only... 100,000 comic book readers, 300,000 comic book readers out there. There aren't millions and millions of moviegoers going and seeing and picking up those comic books each and every week. I mean, Rocket Raccoon had its highest sales, 300,000, a couple of months ago, only because of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Most comic book sales are in the 100,000, 150,000 range. Typically don't go a lot higher than that. Sometimes it'll surprise you. So if you've got 300,000 comic book readers in the world, and this is why I said it was somewhat petty, if they're shutting down the X-Men and Wolverine and the Fantastic Four, is they're only hurting themselves. They're not hurting the studios, because it's not really that much of an advertising dollar. What's the advertising dollar for the studios is the toys and the merchandise. And Marvel did shut down merchandise for, I think, Wolverine. They didn't have any toys based on that. And I don't remember, although someone pointed out that there were actually toys based on Age of Apocalypse. So Marvel is trying to do what they can to stymie it, but really to cut off 300,000 moviegoers is not going to be a huge impact in Sony or in Fox.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you may have a different opinion. That's just kind of the way I've seen that.
Yeah. And I think just nobody can write the Fantastic Four for long periods of time and have it be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only time that I've consistently read the Fantastic Four was when the Ultimate line came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
The Ultimate Fantastic Four, I think I got like the first like 60, 65 issues. And then it really just started to take a turn and I lost interest and I stopped collecting it.
I stopped reading it right after they introduced the Marvel Zombies. That's where we got Marvel Zombies from. That big craziness all took place in the universe.
I have a question real quick, off topic, just a tad bit. Going back to Marvel's announcement, I didn't see them mention Ant-Man at all in this announcement.
Well, so Ant-Man comes out next year in 2015. So these were all Phase 3 movies. Ant-Man is part of Phase 2.
Phase
Age of Ultron
two.
Is part of Phase 2. All the announcements made this week were Phase 3 movies.
Okay, now I know that... which Ant-Man is it that worked for Tony Stark? Wasn't one of the Ant-Men, the people that played Ant-Man worked for Stark Industries? Or am I getting that wrong?
Oh, I think you're thinking of Hank Pym, but I think he was just working by himself
in
his own labs. The current one, Scott Lang, is kind of a criminal that does his own thing.
Okay. Because I was going to say,
hero.
Could they be connecting Ant-Man to Avengers 2 in some way?
No, unfortunately they didn't, because that would have been the natural way to do that, is because Hank Pym actually created Ultron in the first place. But the minute that they didn't include Ant-Man in the Avengers to begin with, they kind of had to rewrite Ultron's creation, and having it naturally come out of the Jarvis tech makes a lot more sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that trailer's amazing, by the way.
It is.
Did you guys happen to see the extended version with them sitting around trying to pick up Thor's hammer?
Yes.
This was the same stuff that they showed at the San Diego Comic-Con and also at the New York Comic-Con last month.
Okay. The look on Thor's face when Captain America almost picks it up is just...
Yes.
It's the best.
Yep. Excellent.
All right. So there you go. Big Marvel announcement this week. What, Brad?
One last thing I wanted to mention is Marvel needs to have a movie happen in May.
Why?
Free Comic Book Day is always the first Saturday in May.
Yep.
So you will see a Marvel film happen at the beginning of May.
Yeah, first weekend every May.
Okay.
Yep.
But the other thing is, and this is where one of my big ongoing conversations, arguments always are that the comic book publishers, because it's Free Comic Book Day, need to get their comics into the movie theaters so that people exiting, you know, Avengers Age of Ultron are getting that free Marvel comic book handed to them.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of leave it up to the comic shops to do that or the bookstores to do that, but I've rarely seen that synergy work out between the movie theaters and the bookstores.
There was a comic shop in La Crosse that actually, I think it was for the second Spider-Man film, the Tobey Maguire mm-hmm. Spider-Man, ended up getting a display case at the movie theater with some of their stuff and like their card of, you know, the name of their shop and their address mm-hmm. To get Spider-Man stuff. So yeah, but it's rare, not a whole lot of, and that blows my mind that comic shops aren't savvy enough to try to ride on the coattails of other things better, or at least try to work out you know, it could be the movie theater that doesn't want to play ball either, but
this is one of those synergistic things that is a win-win.
If
people are interested in the comic book, maybe they'll come back and see that movie again, or maybe the movie is so good, they'll come back and see it again, and now they know that there's a comic book that ties into it. And if you are a movie theater owner and you're saying, hey, come this weekend to see Age of Ultron and get a free comic book, that might be a little bit more incentive at least to drag the kids out to get a free comic book.
I'm a perfect example of this. I was not into comics at all until about 3 years ago. And doing these podcasts and the growth of the Marvel Cinematic Universe really got me interested. Plus DC's their take on this whole getting their universe onto film and TV. I've become a fan. I don't really read that many titles, but I follow. And I've done research. Like I learn about one character and I actually follow the breadcrumbs and, you know, find out who was the original and that kind of thing. So I'm
right.
I love this stuff. I can't get enough of it. And
that's great.
And there's a lot to come in the next 10
years. I mean, if you look at just what's coming out from Marvel and DC, those properties, now granted that includes Fox and Sony, we're looking at between 27, 28 movies coming out that are comic book superhero movies over the next 6 years.
Yep.
That's a lot. And that's not including just regular comic book adaptations like Dark Horse or IDW Publishing, what they have coming up. These are just the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I know it is. All right. Hey, I wanted to have this new feature. We have a new feature on the show. Surprise, surprise. It's called What We May Have Missed. And there's a story that I already mentioned, Sci-Fi's Ascension trailer, which is, you guys have to see it. But there's also a story here about David Goyer attached to writing a new TV series called Krypton.
I did see that. I know that they have a Supergirl TV series in the works right now. But Krypton is a little bit different because it's going to take place on Krypton before everything falls apart.
Yeah, it feels like they're trying to repeat the success of Gotham in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. Biggest problem is it's a sci-fi movie, so you're going to have a huge production increase. And it just doesn't seem like that interesting of a story.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're following the fall of Jor-El, that could be interesting, but really that's like a one season, 12 episode series.
Yeah, what's interesting about the Superman story is Kal-El being shot into space, landing in Smallville, and being raised by the Kents and becoming Superman. That's the exciting.
I would disagree with that, and I would disagree with it just on the grounds of there are different houses, different families of Krypton. So I think they're trying to look at this as a Game of Thrones type situation.
That's a good, that's a good way to look at it.
You have all the intrigue of the politics of Krypton and the heads of the households, and Jor-El's trying to, he was more of a progressive. He wanted to get some changes made and people thwarting that. So I think it has potential of being, if they follow that type of, that formula, I think they could make something good.
Okay. Good point.
Yeah.
Not a fan, Stephen?
He's hit or miss. I mean, if you look at all the movies that he, movies and TV shows that he's worked and developed, he's really hit or miss. He's like, I haven't checked recently, but the last time I checked, he was about 60-40 on the hit meter.
With a bullet or not with a bullet?
Yeah.
All right. Some real quick hits here. Speaking of hits, first trailer for the indie sci-fi space epic, The Last Scout was released. You guys should check it out. It looks pretty cool. It looks like a poor man's... what's the Matthew McConaughey movie? The one coming out next week. What's it called?
Interstellar.
Interstellar. Yeah, it looks like a poor man's Interstellar, but it looks pretty cool anyways. Robert Kirkman was on Twitter this week refuting a rumor that people were saying that Rick was actually dead and all of The Walking Dead was taking place in his dreams, or he's still in his coma. That's pretty cool that we know that that's not a thing. And looks like John Williams has the first trailer for Episode 7 of Star Wars that he has to make a score for. He's got it in his possession, and he has to make the score and record it. Looks like they're going to be recording it mid-November. So that's pretty cool. And that's nice. The stories that we may have missed this week. And that is it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. You can subscribe to us by jumping onto iTunes or Stitcher. We're in both places, or going to our website, galacticnetcasts.com, and there's the links there. You can also find us on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. Feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966, and leave a voice message or a text. And do we have some feedback, Brad?
Yes, we do.
Why don't you lay it on us?
All right. So Big John, who is a listener of ours from Queensland, Australia, was contacting me, and we chit-chat a little bit on Facebook Messenger. And he dropped me some messages about Under the Skin, the sci-fi movie with Scarlett Johansson. And some of the messages he wrote to me, watching the sci-fi movie Under the Skin over the weekend, freaky good, very strange, makes you think twice if a good-looking Sheila asks you to take her to her house.
Sheila, that's got to be slang for Australian slang.
Yes, a pretty lady. And he follows that up with, what the hell, if Scarlett Johansson asked me, I would go anyway. It's Scarlett Johansson.
It's Black Widow.
Yes, it is. And then he followed it up with score found Under the Skin audiobook, 13 parts on YouTube. Then I'm going hitchhiking. then they followed it up with the book is very different. The audiobook is hot. Better ending than the movie, and kind of explains the ending. So I guess if you want the full Under the Skin was a book that turned into a movie, and there's an audiobook version of it. So I guess if you want the full story, get it in all its glory, watch the movie, and then get the audiobook. I'm sure you can go to audible.com and grab the book, and then watch the movie, or vice versa.
All right. Thank you, Big John. And if you want to turn us on to something new in sci-fi, leave us your information, 805-328-3966, or email it to us, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Stephen Schleicher.
Yes, sir.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's a hard name to pronounce.
Thanks for coming on. And
hey, thank you.
Tell us where people can find you and if you got anything coming up that you want to let us know about.
Oh, let's see. Majorspoilers.com is where everybody should go to. That's kind of the center part of the solar system that is Major Spoilers. We don't really have a whole lot coming up right now. We just finished up our Major Spoilers costume contest, which was a pretty big deal. You should go check out one of the winners tomorrow over at Major Spoilers. And then we're just kind of going to cruise into the end of the year and see what happens. We also just finished up our Wonder Woman week, so if you want to learn a little bit more about Wonder Woman, head over to majorspoilers.com. And we finished up a lot of things. We just finished up our critical hit main season, main storyline this last week. And so we've got some off-season stuff coming up in a couple of weeks, so you want to check that out. That's our Dungeons & Dragons podcast. We've got comic book podcasts. We've got movie podcasts. We've got so much going on over at MajorSpoilers.com.
All right.
Nice.
Good stuff, Stephen. Thank you again for coming on. All right.
Thank you.
Is Matt and Anessa asleep? Are you guys still with us?
I keep saying Dave, and like I'm trying to not like shout it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But you just keep talking. I'm like, Dave! Dave!
Yes, Anessa.
Dave! I'm still here. I just have nothing to contribute. So
yeah, I haven't really had anything to contribute. But regarding the MIT Sci-Fi Society, the library, you can become a member to visit and check stuff out.
Ooh.
There are dues, and it's not restricted to MIT students.
Uh-oh.
They say if you're not in the area, there's no point that we welcome the donation.
Oh, awesome. I'm sure they're always accepting donations.
So I thought that was pretty cool. They also have a database of books that you can search and see what they have. And over 90% of all the science fiction ever published in English is what they have.
90%?
Yeah. It says we have both fantasy and high-tech sci-fi, including sci-fi horror. Our collection includes some foreign language material and over 90% of all science fiction ever published in English.
Wow. That's
a lot.
That
is impressive.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, and if you are a member, then members get discounts at some area stores for books, tabletop games, RPGs, card games, etc., etc. So, yeah. it's a shame that Cambridge isn't closer to Wisconsin.
We need to invent
a thing that moves Massachusetts next to Wisconsin.
Or the transporter. I say we invent the transporter, because I could go home to see my family really easy with the transporter.
Boom.
All right. Thank you, Anessa, for doing the investigative report. Next week, we'll investigate why your restaurant bill has become more expensive recently. Is it aliens or robots? Tune in next time on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
Surprise, it's zombies. lousy workers.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. I call this meeting adjourned. We will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye, Dad.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.